This is Dyslexic Design Thinking. For the past 25 years, Gil Gershoni has been the head of his own branding agency, Gershoni Creative. And one of the things he's passionate about rebranding is his dyslexia. In this series, Gil sits down with members of the dyslexic community for eye-opening conversations about the intersection of dyslexia and creativity, and what dyslexia can teach us about ourselves and the world around us. Today, Gil talks to actor Lloyd Everett. Lloyd is a star of stage and screen and was nominated for Best Newcomer at Britain's National Television Awards. Enjoy.
Welcome, Lloyd.
Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, man, it's great to have you. You know, I wanted to start today. What are the earliest memories of you watching somebody perform?
I know it was actually watching Jean-Claude Van Damme and the Rocky movies. Why Jean-Claude Van Damme is because my dad told me it was him because they have a similar look. And as a young 4 or 5 year old, you're sitting on your dad's chest thinking you're watching your dad's movies.
That's awesome.
So that was the first like experience into sort of like my connection to sort of art. And also, yeah, that really inspired me, and where I would like sort of practice the moves, practice the fight moves. And I would like, I ended up being a black belt in Taekwondo. But yeah, that's where the seed was planted. Which is interesting because you don't think of Jean-Claude Van Damme as like, you know, he's an action star. He's not your Daniel Day-Lewis's or your Marlon Brando's, who I totally admire for the acting aspect of it. But that was the first person.
When was the moment that you knew you wanted to become an actor?
It's a good question. I think I would always, I mean, looking back now on my life, and I have very strong memories from childhood, I would always reenact things, not knowing that I was acting. You know, I was like reenact a scene. I'd play both characters. And I think seriously, when I thought, no, this is what I'm going to do, is when I went to a school called Barry Boys. It was an all boys comprehensive school. And it was there where I did like a scene, like an improvisation scene in drama. Now, we took this subject not seriously as a class and as myself, but it was somewhere where I just could express myself. So sometimes you're very naughty, sometimes you took it seriously, like just whatever the energy of the classroom was would dictate how it went. But this one time I did a scene with this guy and we were improvising, and it turned into like quite a chaotic argument. And all the class members didn't know if we were being serious or not. So then I knew I can do it. And then that was the seed where I was thinking, wow, I can do this as a job, as a career. And then it was just step by step by step, things that I was sort of moving towards and things that were just suddenly happening. I started to just know this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
I would say I was about, in that classroom, I must have been around 14, 15. Mm-hmm. But I would say drama class, as soon as I got to secondary school. So from the ages of 12, I would say, like, I was never involved in like school productions or anything like that. I think I was far too nervous, far too one of the lads, you know, like I was never going to be seen on stage for love nor money, you know, purely based on fear and insecurity, really. But it was only when I was just like sort of held an audience, I realized its power, as you were.
You were the youngest actor to play Othello at the Shakespeare Globe Theater.
Yeah, I know.
How did that come about, man?
Like, I just had this audition. Bill was the director. He was an amazing, amazing, amazing guy. Now, he's an actor that worked there for many, many, many years. Like, he did like 10, 15 years at the Globe. So I think when I was there, I remember auditioning. I was seeing all these older guys sort of like before me. But I think I just so connected with the story and with Othello himself. And going from not being able to read well, Shakespeare was the thing that I would practice in drama schools in the summers. I would just read as much Shakespeare as I could. And that's what helped me understand the power of language, just, you know, sitting there or standing there and saying a verse and people getting it, people understanding it. And I was really, I don't know what the word is, I was really inspired by that, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so that came about and I performed. And performing at the Globe is like performing at like a gladiator's sort of arena, because you have these big, huge wooden doors and you hear the crowd outside because it's like daytime, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's a different type of nervous energy because you just like, and then boom, the doors open, you step out. Yeah, so that was a great experience for me and mm-hmm. one that was full of growth as well. I'll definitely return to that role.
Yeah.
At some point.
You know, Shakespeare and dyslexia doesn't feel like they are supposed to go in the same sentence.
Mm.
How did you make it work? What was the challenging that you face with the role and how did you work through them?
Biggest challenge was just learning all that dialogue. So I ended up drawing every single line, every word. And I wish I still had it. I don't know where it is, but there's a script around somewhere, whether it's in my mum's house or someone's house or somewhere in the attic, where there's the whole Shakespeare written out in picture form. And I guess that and repetition, you know, like that really helped me understand the lines. And what's fascinating about Shakespeare is that like it's quite known that some of the words they just came up with. And it was just like the feeling that the word gave you, which is why they put it in there. Because it connects to, you know, like some part of our human physiology or whatever, where that sound is the description of what they're saying. And I think I connected to it on that level as well. Like, I could just say a word, I had no idea what it meant, but I could almost guess what it meant just by the sound of it. So yeah, that was a great experience.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of folks will be curious to know how a dyslexic actor learns his lines. And you kind of were just talking about that you drew it. Tell me more about this, how you go about it and how it started for you to sort of translate mm-hmm. the story, the, you know, the script in that way.
It was coming from really struggling with auditions because they come so quick, you know. Sometimes it's like, we want you in the room tomorrow. Here's a monologue. And, you know, for a dyslexic actor, you're just going, no. You're going, no, no. You know in your mind, it's like, there's no way.
I can feel it, yeah.
Yeah. And it got to the point where, like, it was a little bit embarrassing. I remember there's definitely a couple of auditions where, because I can't read, some actors are really good with the script, right? They just like look down, look up, look down, look up, and they're able to deliver it. But because the way I see words, sometimes I see them mixed up, sometimes I don't, sometimes it's, you know, I'm saying the completely wrong word. So that was never working for me. So my only option was to learn it. So I'd learn it as much as I could. And sometimes it just was like, you know, like so down by the fact that like, this is showing none of my ability. This is purely a test on my memory and it's got nothing to do with acting.
Hmm.
And so I remember I went up for this role that I was really, really, really keen for and they sent it through. And to be honest, I had like 3 days to prepare for this, but the pages were like 10 pages long. So each scene was like, yeah, like 3-4 pages. And I was going to my head, it's just no way. There's just no way. So I remember just being in the gym on the bikes and I was reading my script and I don't know what the word is. It's not like I give up, but I was just like, I guess I would call it in my mind. I was like, this is never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was just, I just started to doodle the script without consciously thinking what I was doing. I just read the lines and I was just like, I don't know, like say, I'll meet you in the castle. You know, it's like put a little eye and then draw a piece of meat and then draw like a finger pointing to someone as some you and then just draw a castle. And I remember looking at it and I go, I'll meet you in the castle. I'll meet you in the castle.
Hmm.
I know it straight away. I knew it.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. And I just had it. I just had it. And it was like one of the best auditions I ever did, like during that period of my time. So that's when I knew I had a solution to lines, basically, because that's the bare bones of it. You know, you have to know the dialogue.
Of course.
Unless you're doing an improv, of course.
Yeah. Do you still do that? Do you still draw your scripts?
You know what? I tend not to these days. My sort of developed in a different way. And I think that's because my brain just developed. I never feel an issue with lines anymore. So it's like, I just look at the script, and where the drawings were a kind of tool to remember the dialogue, now I'm not really trying to remember the dialogue. I'm just like, what is the character saying? What is he doing? Why is he saying this? What's going on? Who am I? You know, asking the questions that you need to know when you play a character. So I think just that part of my brain grew. But sometimes I would say, like, if I am struggling with something, like it could be a line I'm struggling with, it, I'll just like physicalize it. So maybe a line like, how do we escape? You know, and I'll be like, just, I'll just do that. And I'll just know that that means, how do we escape? So yeah, I'll just do something physical if I am tripping over something. But usually now, yeah, just like, I don't see them as lines necessarily. I see them as like spoken thoughts. So think of it from more of a kind of psychological point of view, because why would someone say this?
As you were describing, you know, I'll meet you at the castle, and you were describing how to illustrate that. That was awesome. And I was like, okay, can we take a vocabulary with icons and turn it into a font? So then you can just select a script, convert it to your own font that would just give you those icons.
Yeah, or those that's marks. Cool. It'd
be really cool, right?
Yeah, I like that.
But I think, you know, to your point that you don't do it anymore, and I found it with the work I do as well, is that I used to do it because it was something that allowed me to hold something to deal with my anxiety and my fear. And that's, I always loved theater. I never went toward it because I was terrified to read the lines and get on stage and be that scared, failure, stupid 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 year old in school. You know, so I figured, you know what, I'm staying away from that as far as I can. You know, and then you build the trust, and you obviously, as you have successes, and you feel, okay, I can relax, and then I can actually find other ways of doing it and whatnot. But I love that technique.
I think that idea of like, yeah, having a font, like pictures, like for instance, I always remember my picture for need, like I need to talk to you, I need to see this. It would just be someone with some hands out, you know? As in, like, that's what they need, something. And yeah, that also would have saved a lot of time. But I think what the pleasure in doing the illustrations is that it's going in subconsciously just as you're drawing it. You know what I mean? It's sort of like marinating in you. I think the font thing would work as well. But there is something about just doing the drawing, you know?
Yeah, I can totally see that. And, you know, I'm sure this was a bit ago, before emojis and all that, right? That's kind of what emojis are, right? So it's like, you kind of the original, you know, the goat of emojis, man. So very cool, you know. You were acclaimed for your role at the BBC One series, The Casualty. And our American listener might not be so familiar with this massive success in the UK. Talk a little bit about the experience and how you worked on that character.
Yeah, that was my first. So it's probably worth mentioning that I did like 5 years of theater. I knew all the actors that I'd loved had done theater. And it was like, even the big movie stars like your De Niro's or your Al Pacino's, they did plays. And they'd always talked about, that's where you really learn how to act. So I was like, I had that thought in my mind. So I was like, I was just want to keep doing theater. And then when I was like really ready to finish, then, yeah, this role came up, Casualty. Again, it was given to me because of the theatre, because I had done a play at the Bush Theatre called Perseverance Drive. And it was like playing a preacher's son. But there was a BBC guy in the audience watching, and they just had this character. I mean, it's quite a funny story. They just had this character that they wanted to put in. So when I went for the audition, there was no one else there. So I had the pressure was in. I was like, how can I not get a role when no one else is really going for it? But still, you know, you're still in front of the execs, you're still in front of the, like, you still got to pull it off. And then, yeah, they offered me like a series regular, and I really was like enjoying it. And I remember just one day someone came into my trailer. I had no idea. They were like, oh, you've just been nominated for a national television award for best newcomer.
Wow.
And then, yeah, like I went from there. I really enjoyed like working with Michael, he was a paramedic, played a character called Ian. Like that was, because when you go to work with someone every day and you get on with the person and the synergy's right, it's just like playing in a great sports team of any sort where you just trust the players and every day you go there is a good time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was nominated for that. And that was like and this is not to like sort of take away from this program, but I always saw it as this is a 9-to-5 acting job. This is quite rare, you know? So here's where you're going to try things. Here's where you're going to make mistakes. Here's where you're going to really practice your craft. Mm-hmm. And for that, it was just amazing. Mm-hmm. You always get another opportunity. You're always going to get another take.
Yeah.
So that's how I saw it. I saw it as like just practicing my craft.
You also appear in a TV adaptation of the DC comic book, The Sandman.
Yeah.
Comic books can be really helpful for people with dyslexia, by the way. Were you a fan of comic book when you were growing up?
You know what? I was into a fan of the manga films and the manga cartoon characters. Mm-hmm. So that's what I watched. I watched, I guess, the comic books and were then turned into cartoons. And I was a massive manga cartoon buff. So I didn't really have too many of the comics. But I can absolutely see how it would, you know, you get the story just from the pictures and the storyboard. So, yeah, for me, that was amazing, obviously, to do that, because it was always something I wanted to do, like to do a comic book series of some sort. And again, that sort of audition for a few roles in that, and I auditioned for the role that I got, but I didn't hear anything. And then suddenly I got the phone call like, yeah, they want you to play Hector Hall. And I was like, wow, okay, this is great. And I worked with so many good people on this show. I mean, so many talented people. And Andreas Biaz, who directed it, who's the director of Narcos, you know, then I started to like see the certain intricacies of performance that I wasn't totally aware of. Let's say, for instance, you know, you have like, because you see the camera there, right? And I just do that. Now, there might be a natural thing. If you do that, he's like, hey, look, don't move anything here because you'll just disturb the shot. And so now I was understanding like, okay, frames, sizes, how much can I move? This is powerful when it's completely still. So then I started to like add those layers to what I was learning. And yeah, that was a real, really good experience.
Beautiful, man. When were you diagnosed with dyslexia?
Whilst I was in drama school, no one really picked it up in school, which is interesting because the signs were clear, but no one picked it up. But it was when I went to drama school and a lovely woman called Marilyn LeConte, she was like, she said to me, I can see you waiting to say your line. And I was like, I'm not waiting to say my line. I'm just repeating it in my head because I keep forgetting it, which is not acting, of course. But she was like, you know what? I think you might be dyslexic. And she set up a meeting. We did the tests and they were like, yeah, bona fide dyslexic. How did you get this far without even knowing about it? And yeah, they helped. They really helped. Back then it was more with colors, like sectioning thoughts out with colors. So that really helped me. So just coloring the thought patterns, which is another important thing I think is maybe to mention, is like, it's the thought patterns that we're trying to learn, not necessarily the words or the lines. Because if you think about how things are written, they've got a lot of commas in there. They've got a lot of full stops and hyphens and things like this, but we don't speak with punctuation usually, do we? Like I keep continuing what I'm saying now and who knows when it could stop.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? So, but when it's written down, it's not written down like a thought necessarily. Mm-hmm. Some person might say, well, the thought is the full stop. But in actuality, we don't stop sometimes when we speak. We just plow through. So that was really helpful during my time at drama school to get that technique.
What was your life before you were diagnosed?
I think looking back, like maths was always challenging. Like I loved science, but I could never remember the chemistry sort of, you know, the little CO, you know, I know the basics, but when we're talking about what, you know, what is the symbol, whatever, for your zinc, so for your magnesiums. So I think I just, like, out of pure pleasure of learning it, I did good in it. And I'd say things like English, my strong parts were my storytelling. So I never had the right punctuation. I never had good writing or sentences, but I was able to put my imagination down on the page. So from doing that, like, I never felt too out of place. The things that I remember that were really hard was if you were like reading a book, for instance, and I think a lot of dyslexics get this. You read the first page, you start reading the second page, and the second page doesn't make sense to you because you've already forgot the first page. You got to go back. You got to go back to read. So my school was a lot like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What am I reading again?
Yeah. That happens to me usually by the end of the sentence. I'm like, what was the beginning of that sentence? Like, I was so caught in trying to get it right that I completely lost track of the point, you know? And, usually a very good technique to go to sleep though, you know? I would, all I have to do is read one sentence and I would be like, I'm out, man.
Yeah. That's one thing as well. Definitely, I get tired. But I think it's definitely worth mentioning Game of Thrones, because that's the first book I read from start to finish. It just had an impact on me. And I'm in my 20s here, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the first book. And that's a big book. Mm-hmm. So it just goes to show, like, something's just got to spark the interest, the passion inside. Something's got to, like, give you the desire to keep reading, to keep wanting to find out, then you won't forget, you know? But when you're doing it for school purposes, to pass a test, you know, it's difficult because you're not doing it because you're passionate about it. You're doing it because you want to look good at home.
When you went to drama school and Merlin sort of sensed that you had dyslexia, were there a lot of resources available for you at the time?
Yeah, they actually gave me a very nice laptop. So that was very helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they gave me something that I could, like a microphone that I could speak into instead of write into, like I could speak my thoughts into it.
That's cool.
So that was really good. Yeah, I had no complaints about what the things I was getting, actually. Mm-hmm. It was just when you left drama school and got into the industry, you don't have the comfort blanket of drama school anymore. What I mean by that is if you've got to learn something, they're going to give you time to learn it. Not when you're out there in the big bad world. You get given the time you're given. So that was in the next difficult transition. But we kind of sort of like touched on that around the drawing the lines. But but yeah, Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama is where I went. And Dave Bond was the head at the time. And he was great. He was great. Everybody loved him. He had time for everybody. And the school was great. You know, there wasn't one way of learning something. I think that's why I really liked it. Whatever style suits you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a few things I know we've talked about over the time, you and I, about when you realize that dyslexia is a gift and you love doing what you do, and then you find ways to feed it. You want more ways to satisfy that mind and that approach. You know, when did it click to you that dyslexia was a positive rather than a negative? Was there a moment that you realized that?
I think I just understood, like, I imagine things the way they're going to be. So if I was thinking of a scene, I feel like my imagination part of my mind is maybe quite amplified. I see outside the box slightly. I may see something written like this, and on first read, I'm like, yeah, okay, that reads fine. And then I'll just sit there and I'll think about something or let pictures come to my mind, and then I'll have different interpretations of it. And I think probably that is the sort of the gift of just like reading the script, putting some music on, lying back, and then just letting your mind show you. I don't know what it is. I don't know if you are doing it, like you are trying to imagine it, or if this is like a channel of some sort, you know, where how involved are you? That's the mystery, I think, the mystery part of it. But yeah, I'd say that was the super positive aspect of it, of just like, no, like your mind knows. It knows. I don't know how it knows, but it does. Mm-hmm. And then it just helps you trust, you know?
Yeah. I can completely relate to that. I don't know. It's the more you practice, you know, often with the dyslexia, we practice how not to be dyslexics.
Mm.
Or the society, the structure, the reading, the writing, it says, and then we have so much emotional trauma from trying to be average and not being seen. But I think as we get older, and I think you kind of talked about it so beautifully, is that when you start to practice and embrace your dyslexia, you actually start to have a relationship with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you have with it, you can let go of that, some of that trauma, and embrace it and let it flow.
Yeah.
And I think because my mind, it doesn't think linearly, when it flows, whoa, man, like take a step back because it's going to be a lot. It's going to come at you like a lot. Like, so then I had to learn how to like, you know, okay, whoever I'm talking with or at or to is,
yeah.
And they're not dyslexic, they get super saturated and be like, yo, man, like you got to like take it easy with me. Too much information all at the same time. So I've learned to kind of how to dance with it.
Yeah,
and defeat it and say, okay, now I'm going to like really turn the volume. I'm going to turn it to like 5. I'm going to go to 11, you know, and that kind of play with it over time. I think to what I hear you saying is like, I can really look at something. I can go double down on dyslexia with it and see a lot of things, you know, and it just flow throughs me. And often, you know, when I work with my team at the agency, they ask me, oh, can you say it again? And I can't do it twice.
It's just
I can do it again differently and it would be another good idea or another way, but I can't give it to you the same way again. So I was like, record it when it comes out or take a note because it would not come out again next time. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know.
That's the flow state. No, you're right. That's spot on. That is the flow state, right? Where like you're just in it. You're just letting it flow through because it's not planned. It's like sometimes, you know, people talk about some of the great speeches that people do. And sometimes, well, I just actually found this out, this one. So I have a dream speech wasn't written down. That just flowed out of him. He didn't write those words down. He had something written down, which he followed. And then Martin Luther King just started speaking. And it's the most, and how about that? That came from a place that wasn't written. And it's the most memorable speech, maybe, of our times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a flow state.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's even more rings true to me now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's almost like humanity speaking through the heart and it just, you can channel it and you can just like, and again, just let it flow. If you try to sort of put your hands around it, it's going to start being like, you know, it goes away. It's like, it's weird.
That's the weird magic thing is about all those. I mean, even that in acting, right? Like when you plan too much, you need that empty space somewhere. The space for it to be filled. Like, and then you end up doing stuff that you just like have no idea how that happened. And if they said, oh yeah, I could do that bit again, Lloyd. And you go, what bit again? A beginning, middle and end. I think is important, but then there's all the space in between and you let it go and you don't know how you're going to get to the middle and you don't know how you're going to get to the end. You just, you know, and that is the same sort of thing. I think this sort of, if you try and do it and hold it, it ain't going to come out the way that you want it to.
Yeah. I can relate to that a lot because we stream so much energy. As dyslexics, I often see that as a common thing. I've had to learn how to, I think to your point, but maybe, I don't know if it's the same, but how to empty. You know, how to make part of the daily practice of emptying to make room. You know, and if I do it on a regular, then I have a very healthy ecosystem. And if I don't, then there's just too much, like the loudness, the volume, the passion just like kind of doesn't have a lot of place to go, you know? So I think that's why a lot of dyslexic are, you know, in the creative world, because you have somewhere to put it.
That is a very good point. Like, yeah, you have this side of you that just has to be expressed. And when it feels like that's not happening, yeah, these things start to build up. I think through that as well, it's the kind of, you know, I don't, maybe it's a, spiritual look at things. But I really feel like having like that acceptance of all the things, of all the struggles that you struggle with, of all the parts of yourself that you struggle with, or whatever it may be something like a dyslexia. And then just going, oh, yes, I struggle with it. Like, you know, being like, not struggle with it. Just be like, yeah, I struggle with it. And then suddenly you're able to get better because you're just like, you know, like you're not trying to get better. You're just, it's happening in an organic way where it's like, this is me. Yeah, I really struggle to do this. Mm. All of a sudden, things start to ease for some reason.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting how flow or letting go is, it can be the hardest thing at certain times, and it can also be the easiest things. And it's almost, it's just a weight. You have to shift your weight. Mm. It's, you know, so by acknowledging, yeah, I have a hard time reading, it's no longer a charge. Or, you know, it's like you can, and then you can kind of almost like say it, and it's no longer holding you down. And yeah, it could take a lifetime to get there, and it can take a second, yeah, you know, but that's then, you the know, and you can kind of own it. I mean, you, instead of it holding you, you know, every time I talk about like flow, I always think about, you know, if you're in a river and you hold to a rock in the middle of the stream, you can't do it for too long. The river's motion is, no matter how, it's always going to eventually wear you down. Mm. But if you let go of the rock and just let it take you, you will flow down river to places you never even imagined. And it's just that sort of surrendering, but it's not giving up. It's not being conscious or present or with intention. It's just, like you said, just relax, you know, relax with it.
Yeah, no, it's a great analogy. Really great. I really saw that. Maybe that is the dyslexia. You know what I mean? If you would have spoke to someone, did they see, like, sometimes, I don't know, like, well, what just happened then? You just explained that story. I saw the whole image. Does everybody have that? It's more akin to sort of maybe a more dyslexic brain. I don't know. I don't have the scientific test in front of me, but I think there's something about it.
Yeah, well, you chose a really big one, but I can definitely, I can definitely see that. That's, you know, I read so much, but I read with my ears. You know, I just listen to books on tapes, and I can retain that information like nobody's business, man. And so between podcasts, between books, between lectures, talks, it's just like everywhere I go, if it's in the car, I'm so interested in ideas and thoughts, and that I found a way to sort of take that information in. And so for everybody it's different. You know, sometimes, you know, seeing it, reading it, making it, right? Like you said, I love what you said about we can make a font of drawing, but the act of drawing is the part of the, you know, cognitive play with the idea, you know. It's not trying to make it quicker or easier. It's not about that. It's about the experiencing of the ideas that way. And whatever which way is for you, it's like just then embrace it, because I think that that's what's kind of builds that muscle of the strength of our dyslexia and makes you have a relationship with it. What has been the reaction of fellow dyslexic to your journey, particularly in acting or the community? Yeah?
I think the thing that stands out was, I remember it was by maybe like 2018, and I was like doing a play, and I had the message from my agent that they wanted to fly me over to Washington, this place called the Lab School. And I was like, what? Washington? They were like, yeah, you got yourself a business class flight. You're going to go over there. I was like scratching my brain because of what you've done for dyslexics. And I'm just going, it's a free trip to Washington. Never been there. Go. So then when I get there, I meet this lovely woman called Michelle Bernard, who was running the school at the time. And as I'm walking through the hallways, I can see pictures of myself. I'm like, what's going on in this school in Washington? Well, how? And then I'm meeting these teachers, and they're explaining to me that through my drawings that were like quite documented in the press, they somehow came across them and they started to instill those ideas to work with their children. Now, this school is like, I mean, it would be the ideal school that you would send your kid to if you felt like, you know, sitting down in a classroom, opening the book and trying to learn that way. If you feel that there's alternative ways of learning, like this would be the place. Because I remember I went into like a history class and like they were all dressed up as Romans or Celts and they were like playing out, like I was like, what's going on? And it was amazing to see, actually. And everyone was so happy there. But basically, yeah, they'd just taken my ideas around drawing lines and feeling through things. And, you know, I had people saying, hey, Lloyd, they're these kids from Washington. I'm like, it was just bizarre, you know, like I couldn't quite believe what was happening.
Amazing.
Because it's one of them, it's like a tiny microcosm of, have you ever seen the film documentary called Searching for Sugar Man?
Of course. Yeah.
Right. So he has no idea that his music's getting sold in South Africa, right. And they right. think he's like a sort of this dude, this Beatles sort of level. And he goes there, he's like, what's going on? He's like, we've been listening to your music for the last 40 years. I mean, my one is just more of a shock. Like, that is actually quite tragic because, but at the same time, a beautiful ending.
Yeah.
But it felt a little bit of a microcosm of that. You know, he had no idea.
What advice would you give an aspiring actor that happened to be dyslexic?
I would say, don't get too bogged down with the challenges of trying to learn something. Enter into the sort of like, what's pleasurable about it? Is this character, is this something that you relate to? Is this character like you? Is he not like you? Look for like the sort of things that you can do that sort of will gain momentum and energy in a positive way. Because when you're doing what I did to begin with, which is like racking your brains of how to learn the lines, then you're actually going away from why you're even doing this anyway. And it becomes sludge, it becomes hard, it becomes difficult. It becomes a bit of a like, your art is your sunshine and you're sort of just under these weathery clouds while it's raining, trying to work out, are you going to see the sun again? Sort of feeling. So just use and be curious and have a look at the things that you feel about it. If you want to sit there and put some music on and just imagine the scene or imagine the whole movie of this person's life or the backstory of this person, who is this person, his parents, what was his childhood like? All these questions you can do without having to like necessarily grinding in terms of trying to learn something. And then the learning will have an element of like pleasure in it because you've already filled the bank account with, oh, who is this person? And you're enjoying finding out these things, these little treasures. And then when it comes to learning it, you're like, well, you're learning it from a place of feeling good about what you're already doing rather than doing what I sort of did, which was just like, how am I going to learn this?
Great advice. What's coming up next for you?
At the moment, I've got a supporting role in this new series called The Way, which is going to be directed by Michael Sheen. And it's also co-written with Adam Curtis. Adam Curtis, for me, is like the best documentary maker of our lifetime. For me, it's really hard to describe the type of documentaries that he makes. He makes them about the world and why they are like they are today. But he gives like complete factual information on who met who or what happened here. And anywhere I go in the world, I always say, you have to watch an Adam Curtis documentary. And then this audition came up. I was like, oh my God, I've got to be in this. And so I auditioned for it. And yeah, they just like phoned me up and said, we just have a role in it. We want you to be in it. So I'm going to be doing that. I think it would be good to mention as well, like, The Pact was a series that came out at the end of last year, which was filmed in Wales. And that was one of the first times of like, okay, now we're playing those characters that you've always dreamt of playing, those in-depth, complex people that, you know, every actor's dream. So I think that's a good one to mention because it's actually a really good series and really good writing and no one gets the twist and I recommend that one.
I'm so thankful that you made the time to sit with us today.
Oh, no,
I really, really appreciate it. Appreciate you, man, and sharing your beautiful thoughts and guidance for our audience. So thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Lloyd, for joining us today. For those of you who are interested in learning more about Lloyd, you can follow him on Instagram or Twitter at Lloyd Everett. I'm Gil Gershoni, and you've been listening to Dyslexic Design Thinking.
If you enjoyed our conversation today, be sure to subscribe to this series wherever you get your podcasts and follow along on Instagram at Dyslexic Design Thinking. You can also drop us a line at dyslexia@gershoni.com to receive our monthly newsletter and learn about our upcoming programming. Dyslexic Design Thinking is produced by Gershoni Creative. Until next time, be well.